Good morning, everybody. And it's actually a very nice day to be here and a very good place to be here and talking to you about observations and observational studies of large-scale X-ray jets. This doesn't have the switch, probably. So my outline is here. I will talk about the status of X-ray observations and give you some more details about a few objects which are selected just because of I like those objects, and then mention what can we do when we study the jets at high redshifts, when we go to high redshifts. So X-ray jets. The first extragalactic jets were discovered in early 60s, and it's actually interesting to notice that the first one was the optical jet in 3C273, seen on the optical plates. And radio, of course, observations were done soon after this first optical observations, and I was surprised to see that the first radio observations of jets and discoveries were done through the occultations of the moon, which is a very different technique that it's used now. So before Chandra, we knew only about three X-ray jets, Centaurus A, 3C273, and M87. And I start with M87 because this old observations which were done with Einstein HRI, this is the first X-ray imager available to us in late 70s and early 80s. So this M87 detection of X-ray jet in M87 was mainly possible through the observations of the profile intensity of the core and the extended emission. With Chandra, we of course see the beautiful X-ray image, and here this is the X-ray structure overlaid with the radio contours. In the case of 3C273, the Einstein HRI image shown down in the here in the contours, the optical jet X-ray jet here is barely visible, but it was studied in early 80s. ROSSAT shows the little extension here. This is early 90 image, and INSET shows our Chandra data where you have the core emission and then jet extended out here. So you see the difference in the spatial resolution. SENEI jet was very carefully studied in early 80s, and this is the contours of X-ray structure and then extended on into the radio structure here from the first paper by Shire et al. In 1979. And Chandra, of course, allows you to look at the details of these X-ray structures in every part of this 6 kiloparsecs scale jet, and this is the X-ray image and radio contours on top of it. So this is pre-Chandra, and of course, Chandra over the last 10 years discovered many jets. So we are lucky to be in at the time of these big discoveries because we didn't know that those jets are very common. And here we have a selection of few jets from the catalog webpage, which is available at CFA here, and we know more than 90 X-ray jets right now. So there is, I would say, the comparison between early studies in radio and early studies in X-ray of these large-scale structures. So examples here are from different redshifts. So we have the very long jets at redshift 0.7 going to the record redshift at higher than 4, where we have a little blob here. I will come back to some of those examples later. So why do we study X-rays, and why X-rays are important? So X-ray emission in jets due to synchrotron or inverse Compton process, that's what we basically think when we look at X-rays. So the processes are simple, but synchrotron emission requires very high energies of particles for those magnetic fields which we imply for our jets. And this means that the short lifetimes of these particles are required for in very different regions where we observe the jets at large scales, we see that they continue. So we need to have the continuous accelerations at very large distances from the core. Inverse Compton process is, of course, the process where the synchrotron photons are upscattered to X-ray emission by the same population of in the jet. So it's SSC synchrotron self-comptons or external inverse Compton where the source of low energy photons is outside of the jets. So this few processes are important, and this is where we actually can give some constraints looking at the X-ray data. So the first Chandra jet detected when we looked at the sky and tried to focus our mirrors was the one at, in Parkes 0637 at redshift 0.6. So this is the knot, and for this knot, the spectral points. So this is nu f nu versus frequency. So these are two radio points, optical point and the X-ray point. So this few points are cannot be fitted by just one population of synchrotron emitting electrons or particles because of these optical limits. So we have synchrotron component here, and then possibly the SSC or inverse Compton on a cosmic microwave background emission here. And this ICCMB requires the high bulk motions of the jet at the large distance. So in this case, the model required gammas of 10. And I think Łukasz will come back to this point later. So X-ray observables. Right now with Chandra, we can study morphology of jets. So we can look at knots, hotspots, and details of the structure. We can get total luminosity of the jet, look at intensity profiles along the jet, spectral evolution, and variability. And of course, multi-wavelength studies, radio, infrared, and optical, are important in order to actually put things together and try to understand what phenomena we are looking at. Jet length. Greg was talking about the nuclear scales which can be probed with Fermi at this point. It's very nice because we may learn more about the processes which happen very close to the black hole. We have jets on host galaxy scales, and this is SENE example where current Chandra allows you to look at this few kiloparsec long jets in great details, and we can look at the interactions between the jet and ISM and maybe learn what we know about supernovae now being applied at and look at the details of the similar process in those type of jets. And large scale jets where this jet continues for hundreds of kiloparsecs away from center, and they have been discovered in many sources, many extragalactic sources at large distances. So we have continuous jets, and different continuous and curved jets. I come back to this morphology. So I like this comparison. This was put by Dan Harris and Henryk Krawczyński in their review, where they put three examples of the current jets, and the intensity scales are the same in all three plots. We go from M87 jet, which is just 1.6 kiloparsec long. This is X-ray emission of that jet, to 3C276 at higher redshift, where this is the 10 kiloparsec scale, and we have this structure seen here. And M87 jet is basically down, marked by this little blue line. And then we move to redshifts at one or higher, and we see the example of Parkes 1127, where the whole structure is on scales, this is 100 kiloparsecs, so we have 300 kilo, almost 300 kiloparsec scale here, and 3C273 jet is very short. The X-ray emission is very faint, so in this scale, the X-ray emission is below the white scale here, so it's very faint, been detected, and I will come back to that jet more. later. So X-ray morphology, there have been a few studies of large samples, and Marshall and Sambruna had samples of several jets. So here is the example from Marshall paper where we have different types of structures, long and curved jets and hot spots. And when you look at this image, you basically see that all X-ray jets are one-sided. They are basically one-sided, and they have different type of morphology. And the question is, what, you know, what can we learn from that? So my detailed examples, I have a few of them, and I start with Parkes 1127 minus 145, which is my favorite one, because of course we have our own jet discoveries, and I was very lucky to actually discover the jet. And this was one morning when I was looking at the data. Actually, it was in the evening. I looked at the data. I just got the data, and I said, "Okay, there is a standard readout streak and the jet, not the readout streak here and here." And in the morning, I realized that it's actually not a readout streak, but a jet in that source. And the jet was not really known because the radio structure is very faint. So we had our press releases, and talking to the press was quite nice. But I realized I'm really lucky because I was able to actually feel how it is to discover something, and it was good. So Parkes 1127 jet is long, and jet luminosity is higher than 10 to the 44 x per second. Core to jet X-ray intensities are of order 0.01, 0.02, depending on the structure. So when you look at the profile, jet profile, which is coming, sorry, this is, the core has been removed from that image because it's really dominating to the entire structure. So when you look at the profile, you see that it comes down, and we have few very prominent knots here, and then the hardness ratio is basically constant, and it shows slight changes when you come to the regions where you have increased intensity in those structures. The radio jet, we went back to VLA and obtained these radio maps, and as you can see, the 5 gigahertz map shows very faint inner structures, and it becomes more prominent, so this inner part is very steep in radio. And looking at radio and X-ray intensity profiles, we see that the X-ray comes down, and then we have these few knots, while the radio is basically flat, and then intensity in the radio goes up at the knot B and the outer part knot C. And in this map, you can see the X-ray in color and the radio contours at 8.4 gigahertz up here. So there is no significant emission in the inner parts of the jet from radio. And I show this again in this flux plots where I have flux variations coming out in the distance from the core, and X-rays comes down slightly, but radio, these are all different frequencies in radio, increases very dramatically when we move to knot B and C in the outer parts. So the same, when you look at the spectral index is very flat. It's about 0.7 here in X-rays, and then goes up. In radio, it comes down. So it looks like we have two different parts in our very long jets. And as a summary, I just highlighted a few things: that the jet is long, the jet in X-ray intensity is decreasing, radio intensity is increasing with the distance. And one important thing is that we could exclude one model, one component model, where we have the population just for synchrotron component. We have to have at least two populations. And X-ray and radio jet properties suggest that we have two components. We also thought that maybe there could be some modulations of the jet activity in the source. So our favorite explanation was that there is a two-component model. We have jets, and the X-ray is coming from the jets, and then there is this expanding sheet, and the radio emission mostly comes from this expanding sheet. But then there is also the inner and outer part of the jet, and the question is how to explain those two. So I skip this because I have more things. And I mean, this jet was very excited. Yes, exciting. I know there's few 5 minutes left for other jets, and I have to move to 3C273. So this is the beautiful example of very similar behavior. So this jet, which is shorter, when you remember the length comparison, this jet has very similar behavior to Parkes 1127. Radio intensity is increasing outwards. It has actually optical emission, which allows to put stronger constraints on these little knots and maybe study the processes in great detail. And then in X-rays, we have stronger emission closer to the core, and then the intensity goes down. So Jester and collaborators also suggested two component models, two zones models. So in these two cases, we think that you know, the maybe jets look very similar. Of course, things are not simple, and there is the counterexample, because this jet behaves very differently than two others. So this is another 100 kiloparsec long projected jet. It's straight, go down. And in this case, X-ray and radio intensity profiles follow very closely each other. So you can see it here. The green one is the X-ray counts, and the red is the radio. So they follow each other almost to the end, where the X-ray intensity goes, it's a little bit stronger beyond the radio. So it looks like the X-ray jet is longer than the radio jet. Radio intensity goes down very sharply, and X-ray intensity follows and goes down very sharply. And then this is the outer part of that jet. So this is a different behavior than in the two other cases, which is very, I think, interesting, and shows that we cannot apply the same models to everything. Then this is a lower redshift examples of a jet in 3C353. So this is beautiful radio map, and the jet is embedded in this big radio lobes, and is also on the outskirts of the cluster. So this is what it looks like in radio. You see this very nice resolved emission, and it's probably associated with the boundary layer. When you look at the details across the jet, you see that there is increased intensity. So it's a beautiful case for the boundary layer. And when we propose the source for Chandra observations, we hoped that we can look at the emission, X-ray emission from the boundary layer. And this is what we saw. There is nothing like that in X-rays. The Chandra observation is very deep, and we know that we would see that. So we definitely don't see the boundary layer emission. We see knots. There is some structure that emission very close to the core, and then we have few knots out here. But there is big difference between X-ray and radio, which I think it's very good case for our thoughts about jet structure. M87 jet, we just heard Greg talking about flares, and this is the case where I got an example to show the variability in X-ray jets, and we can study variability only in a few cases, because of course Chandra timescale is 10 years, and in 10 years you cannot monitor changes in jets on extragalactic scales. So this variability is actually related, associated with some with HST1 knot, which is very close in. This is radio jet, M87 radio jet. This is Hubble optical image, and HST knot in Hubble is here, and then Chandra X-ray observatory. So HST1 knot is here, and in HST images, you see this knot changes in optical quite strongly. Oh, 1 minute. Okay. So Dan Harris put this picture together where you have the big, this is light curve, so flux of HST1 flare going up from here up to here, very, very strong flare over, you know, last 7 years. So this is 2001 to 2008. Nucleus emission was just flickering here, no big changes. In this plot, you see the light curve, And then the differences, which shows actually the, okay, this is the first derivative, so you have this nice periodicity maybe in the beginning of the flare going up. So this is interesting behavior for theoreticians who try to understand the flaring of the jets. Okay, high redshift, so my 30 seconds. These are highest redshift sources at redshift 3.89 to 4.3 and higher. So what can we do at high redshifts? We can look at the ratio of X-ray to radio emission, and if the X-ray comes from inverse Compton on CMB electrons in the on CMB photons, then energy density of CMB photons in the jet frame scales like this. So at higher redshift, we have higher energy densities, and one can think that those should be higher, and there are some model extrapolations here. We can study the behavior, maybe, and test the CMB models and go further. Summary, it's here, but I think I put my questions, actually, because looking at what we've done over 10 years and what we learned, I was thinking, you know, what can we do to improve our knowledge, and can we make more, can we design a program and study things which actually make a difference? So do we need a sample or a deep image of a few X-ray jets? Not that there is no higher resolution mission, X-ray mission planned in our lifetime. So the only chance we have is Chandra, and Chandra may last another few years. So if we think that there is something which can make progress, we have to do it now, because there will be no time. And the science, which is very exciting right now for us, it ends, and we won't have any more. So that's all. Thank you.
Slide again of the what looked like periodicity and the variability.
Right. Yeah, this is what Dan actually told me to show. Because I asked Dan, you know, what do you think I should ask theoreticians? He said, show this to them.
My one comment is this: this in AGN studies, this issue has a long history. You can see a train of events like that look like it might be periodic. People should always be cautious about this, because if the system is noisy but with very red noise, then a given realization of the noise will look periodic for a while, and then it wanders away from that. Mm-hmm. And there's this famous example all the way back from the late 60s, I think it was 3C48, which looked like it had a bit longer than 1 year periodic variability, and this is shortly after discovery of pulsars. Everybody immediately jumps and says it's a rotating object, and all it was
was
one of our F noise that is it wandered away from that.
Well, this
quickly.
Is a little different, right? Because the light curve doesn't really show that this is the derivative, so it's changing the flux over time.
Right. It's just
it's a little bit different characteristics. And you know, maybe it's a signature of the noise, but why the noise on the other side is different than the noise on that side, right? Because you're looking at the same light curve. Mm. So that's something is happening before that flare, right? Before you get to the peak, whether you have, you know, some event related to reacceleration, and there was some talk which mentioned that theoretical talk. I don't remember now exactly who was saying that, but you can have this increase in particles and emission, and then the decrease, and at some point it's the release of energy, and it's over, right, and it's done.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I have just one quick comment. I just wanted to let you know, maybe this should be addressed more at observers than theoreticians. 3C273 is just about 4 or 5 days ago started to go through unprecedented outbursts in gamma ray band. It's probably the brightest galactic source in the sky right now. It's not a secret we're writing.
Well, but did you do the TRO on Chandra?
Not yet. Well, it's much too bright for TRO on Chandra.
It will burn probably the detector.
I just wanted to
Very nice.
Kind of Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, yes.
So what do we know about variability in spectrum along the jet? Is there a source of the acceleration along the jet, or you think it's all distributed?
Oh, you mean like this 300 kiloparsec jet?
So. Well, any example where you can, do you see spectral variability?
Well, spectral changes, you don't, you know, the variations in time.
No, not in time, in space.
In space, right? Yeah, so there are. So what I was showing you in PARC 727, we see the change from, you know, the spectrum which is hard to spectrum which is soft.
So is this common, or is this anomalous?
We have 4 jets right now where we can study that, and 2 of them show, you know, PARC 727 and 3 C273 show similar behavior, and then the other 2 show no change, basically. So the 4 C1944 and the rest 1055, they basically have the same spectral slope across. It's 0.8, so it's you know, classical stuff.
Okay.